Hello, welcome to my session, Keeping Your Company Secure Using Group Policy, or How Not to Use Group Policy to Make Your Company Unsecure. I'm Alan Birchall. I am a group policy MVP, hence the reason why all my sessions seem to have something to do with group policy, because it's what I know and love. And like many other things, you know, things that you know and love might have some issues with it. Doesn't mean it's not great. And I'm here basically to talk to you about two things that are going on in the area of Windows. One is managing local passwords in group policy, do's and don'ts, what to do, what not to do. I have spoken on stage before here, in this very stage, a few years ago, showing you how to do a few things with group policy preferences and passwords. I'm going to tell you not to do that anymore. I'm also going to go through pass the hash. So who was at Chris Jackson's session about pass the hash and security, right? So what I've got in my session is what I hope is a number of practical implementations that you can do in your organization that will help protect yourself against pass the hash. Going to try to instill some concepts. Most of them might actually make quite a lot of sense, right? This might reinforce it. You might go, well, I kind of already knew that, but, you know, I just didn't have the reason why that was important. Well, this is the reason. All right, and there's a lot of group policy guidance now that will help you to mitigate pass the hash using group policy. So first of all, I'm going to start talking about C passwords. What the heck is a C password? Who here knows what a C password is? One person. Okay, by the end of it, hopefully you all will. If you don't know what a C password is by the end, I haven't done a very good job. So C passwords, it's a password saved in a group policy object. All right, there are a number of group policy settings which will allow you to save a password setting and push that out to the clients of group policy that you're managing. Those password objects are in Active Directory. They have always been in Active Directory. Group policy preferences have been around since Windows Server 2008 and Windows Vista Service Pack 1. You can also got it for XP, right? And they had a concept of C passwords. There is some caveats, though, with C passwords. There are some issues with C passwords. But it's not as if Microsoft hasn't been saying all along, you know what, this C password stuff, it might not be so secure. So what have they previously done? So back in 2009, they released a blog article. I'm sure all of you have had this blog article, read it, printed it out, put it on your wall, favorited it, and memorized it word for word. Yes? Yes? No? No. Okay. Well, all right. Fair enough. There's also a Technic article. Technic article reads, the password stored in as part of GPO and SysVault and is discoverable although obscured. If you choose to store passwords in preference items, you should consider creating a dedicated account for this purpose. Never store admin passwords in preference items. Which is great, because one of the things you can do with group policy preferences is reset the local admin password on all your workstations. Yay. Okay, so this technical says, no, don't do that. When you actually go to configure passwords in group policy preferences, it tells you this password is discoverable, although obscured. Obscured? Look, I'm obscured. I'm still here though, all right? Obscured is just like another translation for really lightly encrypted. So basically, Microsoft all along have been saying, look, C passwords are this thing in your organization. They're really handy. But what was the alternative? The alternative was people, I'm sure some of you already still do this. Let's just say, who here has a friend, not you, a friend, who uses logon scripts, and those logon scripts are used to set passwords of some type on their systems? Hands up. Not? Oh, yeah. Well, there's one friend. Okay. Probably not so common now, right? Because preferences are great. It's really easy to see passwords. But certainly, okay, who had a friend 10 years ago Who would set passwords, maybe the local admin passwords, maybe not via logon script, but there was some sort of script that would set passwords on the machines. 10 years ago, hands up. Lots more hands, right. Who here encrypted that password in that script? One, two, they encrypted the password, okay. So that's good, most people didn't. Most people would go, oh, I need to change the local admin password on all my machines today, so I'll run this logon script out, and of course the password was saved in the script. But to run the script, you know, it usually had to be put in a spot where, you know, it had to be read by the computer. And it's really easy to read that. And usually people don't go, well, I'll just lock it down computers. I'll just have authenticated users there. And if the user knew where to find it, they could go and look at the local admin password and go, oh, that's today's local admin password. Great. I've got local admin on my machine. Yay. All right. What people used to do used to be really, really bad. All right, group policy preferences was way better, right? Here's a way that you could consistently deploy a password to all your machines. I'm specifically talking about local admin passwords here, but any other sort of things, and we'll go through what they are soon. Of a way to be able to configure passwords on a machine in a way that was reliable, in a way that would happen straight away when the machine was turned on, in a way that would happen in the background, and in a way that basically meant the password was stored. It was stored in a pretty well-known location, but the value, for the most part, looked to be completely encrypted. So, basically, what's happened now is security never gets more secure, or security always gets less secure. Like, something that is secure 10 years ago is far less secure than it is today, right? Security is something you always have to come back and revisit. And what was true 10 years ago, right, which was very secure, is not so secure nowadays, right? And C passwords is one of those locations where security has, over time, because computers get faster, the security has got weaker. But where are C passwords used? So C passwords are only used in group policy preferences, all right? And as a bit of history of group policy preferences, Microsoft bought a company called PolicyMaker back 2005 era, mid-2000s, and they bought that company because they really needed something to help administrators like yourself replace logon scripts. All right, the logon scripts in their organization were very hard to manage and control, and group policy preferences basically gave you a whole raft of new features that allowed you to manage group policy preferences. So all these settings here, this is one here, new data source name. So you might not even know in this, but you can configure ODBC data source names using group policy preferences. Who knew that? Who does that in their organization? They actually use preferences to use data source names. Wow, excellent. You can use group policy preferences to create new scheduled tasks. Who here used or even knew about the fact that they could use configure scheduled tasks for their workstations? Excellent. Who here has gone through every one of the preferences and just gone through and go, ooh, that's good, ooh, that's good, ooh, that's good. Yeah, yeah, this is a few. As soon as administrators stumble across that, well, what's that preferences thing in my group policy object? And they expand it and their mind just goes, whoa, look what I can control. Yeah, it's been great. There's some really great features in there. So new tasks, so you can create tasks, right? But as running a task, you can, of course, run tasks in the context of a user, right? You might want to run a task to do some sort of administrative activity on that machine, right? But you want to do it as a special account because the standard user doesn't have local admin access. You might not want to use the system account or something like that. So you can create tasks. You can use group policy preferences to control the username and password that's used to assign to service accounts. All right, now more and more service accounts don't usually run under the context of a user, right? They might run as, you know, network user or local system or, you know, local account, network account, various ones like that, that basically have limited access, but there's still certainly a lot of systems out there that do, and this might be one way you want to configure on those machines because maybe you have a password policy in your organization. Who here still has password expiry set on their service accounts? or knows a friend, Don't admit it yourself, but you know, if you don't want to admit it. Passwords that expire on service accounts, anyone? No? Do those passwords on those service accounts never change? What happens when your IT administrator leaves? They know the passwords to all your service accounts. They're really important accounts. Okay. Well, if you did change your password on your service accounts, this could be one way you could change, update the password on the service itself, right? And you could even use group policy preference to stop the service and restart the service if you really wanted to. Most people don't. You'd just go in there. Drive mappings. Who here uses group policy preferences drive mappings? Everyone does, don't they? Who here doesn't use group policy preference drive mappings? So did you know you can map drives using group policy preferences? Bravo, bravo. Fair enough. No drive mappings, that's a really good response. But okay, you can map drives using group policy preferences. One of the features in group policy preferences, though, is of course, specify username and password, right? Because we all got that Linux server somewhere that's not part of the domain and we need credentials to connect to it, yeah? Something like that, yeah, so you could use that. Normally you don't, because usually it just uses integrated authentication as the context of the logged on user for that drive mapping. And this is probably the one that's used the most. Who here has used group policy, who has a friend who uses group policy preferences to manage the local admin password on their workstations in their organization? All right, so if you know a friend or if you put your hand up, I'm sorry, by the end of this, you're going to realize now that's a bad thing to do. So see passwords, group policy preferences, but wait, it's obscured, but you know, aka encrypted. It's encrypted, right? What does encrypted mean? What's the difference between encryption and a hash? Yes, a hash is not reversible. Encryption is reversible. But it is encrypted, right? Yes, it's encrypted using 2 million bit quantum tunneling random number generator. No, it's not. That's what the C password looks like. And who wants to guess at how many bits are used to encrypt it? The key length. Number of bits in the key? 20, a little bit higher. 32. 32-bit AES key. Luckily, Microsoft never published these things, of course, and they're not required to at all because of the Department of Justice. Actually, yes, they are. So if you go to that MSDN article, you can actually go to the Microsoft documentation on group policy preferences and download the decryption key for group policy preferences. Microsoft are required by law to reveal this. This is part of the core OS. All right, Department of Justice say they have to document all APIs so people can write other applications to interface with their systems. Interesting note, and I don't know if this is deliberate or not, the image you see on the screen there is actually cut together. It actually says the 32-bit AES key is as follows. There's a page break, and then there's just numbers on the next page. So I'm thinking it's like, well, we have to publish this, but let's make it as hard as possible to actually figure out what the key is and put them on different pages, right? So I've actually put it together. So, oh no, I've just revealed a secret encryption key for Microsoft. Uh-oh. Well, why should you care? Who here has heard of Metasploit? Right, Metasploit's great. You can buy it and you'd use it to hack your own network. Don't use it to hack someone else's network. That would be wrong, all right? There's a module, though, in Metasploit now that actually goes off and scans your entire network to find all the group policy preference C passwords, gets the key, decrypts it for you, and gives you your password back. Now, here's the important thing about system volume. System volume is readable by all users, right? Which means a standard user with authentication can go off and scan your entire sysvol and find that C password value. Scared? Yeah? Want to do something about that? So, yeah, Metasploit, there it is. But what's Microsoft doing about it? Can't they just fix it? Let's make it 256-bit encryption. But of course, what would they have to do then? They would have to publish a 256-bit encryption key. because they're required. They don't like the department. Well, I didn't say they don't like the Department of Justice, but they like keeping them happy. But what else could Microsoft do about it? Right. So earlier this year, they released a security hotfix, MS14025. It should have pushed out to all your machines. And who here has noticed that their Group Policy Preferences password field is now disabled? Anyone? One hand, couple of hands. By the way, your Group Policy Preferences password field is now disabled. All right. If you go into the UI there, you'll notice it's grayed out. All right, that might be inconvenient if you want to change it. Yes? So what does that actually mean? Well, enough talking about it. I'm now going to demo it. So that there is a really important KB. What I'm going to go through, that has two PowerShell scripts in it that are provided by Microsoft. You can, of course, download the slides or the video, which will be online very shortly after. All right, but 296.2486, find that KB. There's a whole big spiel about that. I'm pretty much going to go through that KB for you. Yeah, that's my family. All right. Who here thinks, again, they have a friend who might have C passwords configured in their organization? Hands up. Who here doesn't know if they have C passwords configured in their organization? Hands up. A couple more hands, right? Okay. So if you don't have C passwords configured, it's okay. There's still value here. This is what you do now. All right, don't use them. Don't start using them. That would be bad. This is what you start doing now. But first of all, what I want to show you is how do you find all the C passwords in your organization? So there is a PowerShell script, again, on that Microsoft website that you can go and download that is called Get Settings with C Password. All right, this basically does a file crawl and looks for that C password value. All right. There is a field called cPassword. I'll show it to you in a little bit more in depth in just a sec. And I'm just going to scan, and you point that at your system vol. So you type in your sysvol path here. Okay. And then I'm just formatting the list so it comes out nice and pretty. Okay. That's a little bit big to get the whole thing on the one screen. All right. So I'm just going to copy this because, you know, typing is hard. It's now going off. Scan my whole sys file. That didn't take long. If you have a big Active Directory, that could take a while. Right? I've had that go sit there for about 2-3 hours before. Right? And it's basically doing a text search of all the files in your sys file. Opens every file, looks at it. Is there a pattern match? Yes? No? Move on to the next file. What's this telling me? Well, this is telling me the group policy object named workstation set local admin password has a preference administrator built in, and it can be found under computer configuration preferences, control panel settings, local users. This tells you where C passwords are configured in your organization so you can find the problem. Finding the problem is the first step. So I'm going to go to that group policy here. Notice the group policy. It's like kind of grayed out there. It means that the group policy isn't even linked. It's not link enabled, basically. So this doesn't actually have, isn't actually applied. But if we go into here and we go and edit this group policy preference, sure enough, it gives you a warning that there's a C password already configured, right? And it gives you more information. Now, this hotfix doesn't remove C passwords. It's not going to break C passwords in your organization. The ability to apply C passwords is still there. It prevents you from adding and changing the C password value via the GUI. All right, so that's what it looks like there. Notice it's all grayed out. All right, nice and gray. You can kind of see how it's just a little bit grayer there than it is there in the description of field above. You know, I can update the description of users. This is the admin account. You can still do everything else. You can still control groups. It basically grays out the password field. Interesting note, If I copy, and this is a group policy preference tip, you can copy preferences and you can paste them onto your desktop. Yep. And then it shows you the XML. Right? So there's a C password field there. That's what it actually looks like in Active Directory. All right. If you copy, and then I copy it back, and you can do with this with all preferences, it actually lets you do that. And this one also has a password. All right. So how do I delete that? Because I want to get rid of them, right? So I go in, I go delete, and this is how I this is the way I find is the quickest way to open up the system volume location for a group policy object. I go to Windows Settings, Scripts, go either start up or shut down, and click Show Files. Show Files shows me where the scripts are, but that's the path in System Volume. All I have to do is go up two levels, go to Machine, double-click on Preferences, double-click on Groups, groups.xml, this is the XML file, which Group Policy Preferences had. You might need to turn on WordWrap for yourself, I've already done that. But here's the C password field here. I select it and delete. Save. Close that. Close that. Close that. No, I don't have any other dialog box open. I'm going to go in here. Open it up again. Password's gone. You've purged the password. And just to prove that, I'm going to run my script again. Nothing. So I've got rid of C passwords in my organization. Great. How am I going to update local admin passwords on all my machines? Well, you could hire a junior to log on to every machine and reset the passwords that way. That's one way. Some people do that. It's okay to do that if you want, I suppose. You might get the password wrong every once in a while. And then if you start telling him to pick a random password, it'll probably be happy bunny 123, happy bunny 1234, happy bunny 234, something like that. That's not very random. But yes, on that same KB article that I showed you before, there is another password, another PowerShell script. In that PowerShell script, I'm just going to go down here. So actually, first of all, just to give you the setup, I have two workstations here. All right. And what I'm going to do is change the local admin password on these workstations. I am not going to log on as admin one. I'm going to log on as administrator. You want to see my password? Super secure. Oh no, is that projecting? It does project it, yeah, cool. So, No, that was a domain account. Oh. Hang on. Sorry about this. Administrator. So has anyone ever noticed when they type the word administrator, not that you should ever be logging onto your domain as administrator, that it defaults to the local admin account? Do you know how to make that, if you had a, say something like Alan, like if you had a user account, you know how to make it default to the local account? Or do you know how, you know, obviously you can put in the domain name to make it a domain, but if you wanted to default to the local, you can put in the machine name, which is like win8, you know, win81a slash, and you just go dot slash, and that will always default to the local computer name. That's also a really good way to tell what the computer name is without having to log on, because all you have to do is go dot slash, and it says sign into the local computer name. There's a tip, bonus tip, nothing to do with what I'm talking about, but a bonus tip. I suppose it has something to do with what I'm talking about. So I just logged on there with my super secret password, Windows 8.1.8. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go back to my domain controller, and I'm going to use this PowerShell command. But first of all, I need to kind of prime the PowerShell. Users, administrator, open with, notepad. So I'm just going to copy the entire contents of this script. This script is again on that KB article. Download the slides, that KB article there, it's on my slide deck. I'm just going to, all right. The command is called invoke password role. What invoke password role does is it goes off, changes the local admin password on a machine. So let's look at this in detail. Invoke password role is the command. Computer name, dash computer name, that's pretty logical. You can actually specify a text file there. So you can go, here's a text file of all the machines that I want to change passwords on, blah. Local account. So it says local account administrator. It means only change the administrator part account. All right, don't change any other local account names. TSV file name is, where do you want to save the password? Right, you need to record the password somehow. You can set it to random, I suppose, and just throw the password away, but yeah, that wouldn't be good. And then the encryption key. Because this is being saved in a clear text file, you want that password value to be encrypted. All right, this is the super secret password. This is like your master password encryption key. This is not as convenient as group policy preferences, no. But Microsoft took something away from you and they needed to give you something back, all right? So how does that work? So if I hit enter there, let's try my other computer. Yes, okay, that one works. Ah, all right, I think I might know why. So what this has done is it's gone out over the network. It's used WinRM to connect to my machine. So prerequisite, you need to enable WinRM. There's a really good website. It's my website, grippolicy.computer. I go through all the detailed steps that you require to configure WinRM for a computer. Or you could go WinRM space quick config. That would enable it, but you can also enable it via group policy. Basically, WinRM is just opening up remote management for that machine, so you can do this. But what the script has done is it said, well, I looked at it, I changed the password, sure, no worries. But by the way, there's also these three accounts here that I haven't changed the passwords of. So when you do this, you actually get a really good audit of all the local accounts in your domain. And it's like, wow, all these people have created local accounts to give themselves backdoor admin to their own machine. Really good way to find that out while you're doing this. Okay, but it says, I've got guest, I've got Alan, and I've got admin one. I'm not going to change admin one password because I need that for my next demo, but I did change administrator. I then go to the path. Remember I created a file called mypassword.txtfile. That's the encrypted value of the password that this script just randomly generated and set. That's the account name, encrypted password, the target server name, and that's the real name. So in case you whacked a DNS alias or something in the machine, it gives you actual computer name. That's not the password. You know, that's a bit long for a password. So how do I get the password? Well, as part of that same PowerShell script, there's also another command. Convert to clear text password, dash encrypted password. This is the encrypted password. This is not meant to be easy. You don't normally need to log on using the local administrator account on a machine. You should have a domain account to do this, right? Domain accounts should have workstation admin access. Notice I said domain account, not domain admins. I will get back to that later. And I paste the encrypted value in there. Oh, bother. How did that happen? Thank you. Oh, yes. Here's one I created earlier. That encryption key would not work. Okay, let's do that again. Convert to Oh, I did it. Did I do it again? Clear text. Encrypted password. No. Encryption key. P at SSWRD1. Oh no, you saw my password. That value there is the encrypted, is the clear text password from the local admin account on my machine. I copied that. I'm now going to go to my machine. So yes, this would really suck telling a user over the phone. Again, users should never have to have this local. You need this when there's something really bad with your machine. It's somehow been disconnected from the domain. Maybe the account password's got out of sync or something like that. And you just need that backdoor to get on that machine, right? This is kind of like, you know, in case of emergency, break glass. Now, I go clipboard, type clipboard. I do like that feature. And see, it's the same password. I can't zoom it and do this at the same time. Well, I can actually. Can I actually control 4? No, I don't have Zoom it running because I'm not logged on. So, that's the password. I hit... Oh. Use. Oh, yes, yes, yes. The power of the crowd. Thank you. Clipboard, type clipboard. And... Are you serious? But the password has been set. Hang on. No, I have to prove that this works, because if I don't prove that this works, it's just... I'm not going to be able to prove this works now, am I? Oh, oh, I know why. Oh. I didn't have that group policy enabled that disabled my local admin password. Local admin account. Oh, man. More time. If this doesn't work, I'm just going to say, trust me. Time clipboard. Yes! Hi! Oh, I've never logged onto this account before. Oh, oops. But it worked. You can see how I logged on. All right, so it's gone out and remotely changed it. Yes, if the machine is off or it's not connected to the network, this isn't going to work. And it's not going to work when the user just reconnects the machine again next time. You have to do this while the machine is online, unfortunately. All right, not as good as group policy preferences, but heck of a lot more secure, right? So long as you keep that master encryption key password secure. All right. Yeah. The question was, will it tell you which computers don't update? And yeah, it will come up as red saying cannot connect to. Just like that first one I tried, couldn't connect to that machine, and that's why. All right, so the ones that it will connect to, it'll step through. That's the passwords. Now I'm talking about pass the hash. All right, so if you were at Chris Jackson's session, you know pass the hash is pretty bad. Basically, it's not pretty bad. It's just a way hackers can get around your organization if you don't do the right thing. A lot of it might actually seem like common sense, and you're like, oh, well, that's pretty much common sense. But we don't do that because no one ever told us to do that. But why should you really care about pass the hash? Well, there was this big oil company in Saudi Arabia called Saudi Aramco. And what did they get? They got something like 30,000 workstations were all formatted, right? Wasn't pass the hash that formatted their machine, but the hackers got in using an advanced persistent threat, and then they used pass the hash to get credentials to be able to spread throughout the whole network. And once they got the credentials, they go, oh, let's deploy a package that formats the machines. Right, that would be bad. Hackers in China attack the Times again, Wall Street Journal against advanced persistent threat. I'm not picking on China, just they seem to be the one doing it a lot. Target got caught, right? Target had the same username and password on every machine in their organization for a vendor, right? They used that. That's a classic case of pass the hash, right? So to explain how pass the hash works, and again, I might be repeating something that Chris Jackson said, but it does need to be said if you don't know it. Pass the hash is basically when you log on with a username and password, Windows generates a hash and keeps that hash in memory. For NTLM, that hash is as good as the length of your password. It will stay the same. For Kerberos, it's by default every 8 hours it'll update. So NTLM has a attack window of the number of days your password is. So if it's 60 days, you have a 60-day attack window. Kerberos is 8 hours, all right? It's a lot harder to attack a network in 8 hours than it is 60 days. Or if you have no password policy, it's a lot harder to attack a network from infinite days than 8 hours. But it uses single sign-on. So example, Sue logs onto her laptop. She provides a username and password, creates her a session. That session has a session hash. Let's call it just NTLM, the NTLM session hash. And when Sue goes to a file server and goes, I want to access my files, it passes that hash to the file server. The file server says, checks the hash. Hash looks valid. No problem. You can have access. And the file server says, sure, let's create a session, and it gets the information that it needs. No worries. That's how single sign-on works for every system, not just Windows. Single sign-on, right? Pass the hash technique, right? Fred's laptop. Fred doesn't have access to the file server that Sue accesses. Maybe the file server that Sue accesses has confidential medical information on it because she's a doctor or something like that, but Fred's just, you know, the receptionist, something like that. Low privileged account, doesn't need access to confidential medical information. So Fred logs onto his laptop, but he also downloads that email to find out how to get free, I'm trying to think of something politically correct, how to get rich. Right, but it actually has malware in it, and that malware gets installed on the machine. The malware goes, hey, I'm Fred, what can I do? Can't do much. No, don't have access to that, don't have access to this, can't get much. I've got a foothold on his machine, this is great. But his machine doesn't have anything on it of use. The hacker could go, well, I want to trash that machine, that'd be fine, but you know, what's the point of that? But what if the local admin password on that machine was the same as the local admin password on Sue's laptop? So the malware could use that information to connect to Sue's laptop, spread to Sue's laptop, infect malware on there, grab Sue's hash. Well, there it's saying it's using Fred's hash, but let's say Fred maybe had access to another workstation, or maybe Fred is your local administrator in your network. Hey? Oh, really? How much have I been talking? Are you serious? Sorry. No wonder you're all like going blank. Single sign-on, Sue's laptop. Hey, this is laptop. She logs on, gets a hash. The hash gets passed to the server, file server, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, pass the hash. Fred's laptop. He logs on. He gets malware. See, Red Cross? I'm thinking, this looks great. And you're like, what am I looking at? Sorry. Fred's malware. Okay, Fred's malware now goes to Sue's laptop. Laptop gets encrypted. Compromised. Sue's laptop's compromised, but gets Sue's hash, and Sue has special access. Now uses Sue's session to go to the file server. All right? Can't do anything for Fred, except maybe for spare to another machine. Goes to Sue's laptop. Sue can do lots of stuff, so I'm going to piggyback off Sue because she has the special access. And so the hash, and so the malware gets on your file server. Not good. So attack scenario. So there's kind of two attack scenarios past the hash. One is lateral movement. I can get into an organization, I can't see anything on the machine I'm on, but I can spread to other machines that are like my machine, workstations, right? I can go from workstation A to workstation B to workstation C. I can't go to servers, right? Making the jump to servers is privilege escalation, right? So how does that work? So that's where you log on to a workstation, maybe that workstation has domain admin credentials cached on it, right? Or maybe it just has server admin credentials cached on it. Something extra than what you already have. And how is that? How would that look? So typical, you can see this now? Cool, just checking. So malware gets sent via email, by some way, to a heap of machines. One of those users is, say, a socially engineered socially engineered challenge to be able to and actually open that email, and the machine is compromised. From that machine, you can spread to another machine. I'm getting more credentials. I can go to another machine. Boom. I hit a machine that has domain admin credentials. I go straight to the domain controller. I've now got complete access to the entire domain. All right? That's pretty scary. So what can I do about it? All right, so I can restrict your domain admin account. I'm going to talk about how to do that. I can restrict and protect local accounts with admin privileges. All right, and I'm going to talk about how you do that. And I can restrict inbound traffic using firewalls. These are not the only steps. I have many KB links to the white paper at the end of this page. These are kind of like the most effective mitigation steps. Right? It's like saying, what's the most effective way to not get a virus? Have antivirus software installed on it. Don't run anything that you don't trust. Disconnect your computer from the internet. Hot glue gun the USB ports. There's lots of things you can do to protect yourself from viruses, but the level of effectiveness is different and the amount of effort required is also different. All right? So what I'm here to kind of also instill in you is a layered level of access. All right? Now, back in my day, I had domain admins on my normal account. Who here has ever, in their entire history, ever had domain admin access on their normal mortal account? And I'm talking way back. All right, keep your hand up if you still have domain admin access and you're willing to admit it on your mortal account, or have a friend who has domain admin access. Okay, that's really bad if you've got your hand up. Don't look at them. All right, don't look at their T-shirts that say where they work from or their badge or anything like that. But basically what I'm after is, you, of course, most of you should now have a dedicated admin account and a normal account. Everyone, hands up, got a dedicated admin account, a normal account. Great. Problem with that, who's ever logged on to their normal workstation with their admin account? Right. That's the problem. So you have your normal mortal account. The next recommendation is you should have a workstation's admin account. You have an admin account that's dedicated to the administration of workstations only. You should have a server or role admin account, such as SQL administrator account or server admin account. And I know this sucks because now you have to remember 3 passwords. And you should have a domain admin account. Now, what happens is if you have malware installed on your workstation using your mortal account, and that malware is on your workstation, and then you go to install some software on your machine using your domain admin account because it runs as a UAC dialog prompt that says, please provide your admin credentials now, the malware that's been quietly sitting on your machine that you had absolutely no idea about then harvests your domain admin credentials and goes, hey, I've got domain admins. Great, I can spread to the rest of the network now. All right, that's bad. Question?
Is it the same if you use like a run as or run as different user option when you run an app?
Yes, because if you are logged on in any way, shape or form to that machine, that's bad. What's not bad is if you remotely connect to that machine via the network, like mapping a drive, right? Standard authentication to a server across the network is fine. You're not the hash isn't stored in memory on that machine. All right, you're just authenticating that machine and there's no problem. But if you've logged on in any way, shape, or form, if you've typed the username and password in on that machine and there's malware on that machine, we're talking about getting the hash here. But if they can get the hash, they can probably also install a keyboard logger. I'm only just talking about the hash here. If they got the keyboard logger, they would have got it that way as well. So something else which I'm going to demonstrate is blocking the remote use of local accounts. So the problem with local accounts is that local accounts with the same username and password on a machine has the same hash as every other machine. Okay? Which means I can use a local account. Who's ever connected from one machine to another machine using a local account because they both had the same passwords? Right, but it's a local account. How can a local account access a resource on a network? That's just... Yeah, it's by design, right? The same hash. It'll work, right? But that's not what local accounts are for. Local accounts are for local activity, not network activity, right? So what has Microsoft done recently? As of Windows 8.1 and Windows Server 2012 R2, There are two new built-in account types called local account and local account and members of administrator group. Right? And I'm going to show you how you can use this to protect your network against other local accounts in your network. So the really strange thing is that you might actually go away from this session and go, first half of the session he told me how to set a random password to every one of my machines. But then in the last half of the session, he told me how I could protect my network from accounts that have the same password. So what do I do? They kind of conflict. Yes, they do conflict. All right, those two guidances kind of conflict. If you set a random password to every one of your machines, the hash is different on every one of those machines because the username and password is different. But if you have the same username and password, and if you want to keep the same username and password in every one of your machines, this is a way you can isolate those accounts from other machines in your network with the same username and password. All right. They've also backported this via a hotfix, KB2871997. Again, you can download these slides. And while you're doing that, you can log on and rate my session as really great. Remember, all fours. They have released a hotfix that will also apply this to Windows 7 and Windows 2008 R2. So they have backported this functionality to Windows because it's that serious. Like, they don't normally backport functionality. But this is a serious security. And this has some great effects. So demo time. You can see my screen? Very good. All right. Okay. Demonstration number one. So how I was talking about layered administrator access in your organization, this is something that Group Policy Preferences is still really good at. Group Policy Preferences allows you to control the local administrator account on your network. And what you can do is set up... sorry about this. I'm just trying to find the right one. Local admin. Yeah, that's it. Okay, what you can do is you can set up a group policy that will actually control the local administrator account in your organization. Now, built-in accounts, there's domain admins, but what I'm suggesting is what you create is a workstation admins and a server admins. This is my Alan Birchall guidance. So your mileage may vary, please test before you implement. But what I'm saying is create a workstation admins and a server admins account. Your workstation admins is now your replacement for domain admins on your workstations. Your server admins account is now your replacement for domain admins on servers. But wait, doesn't that mean my domain admin account doesn't have access to my workstations and servers? Why, yes, it does. You need to devalue the permissions and privileges that your domain admin accounts has. You need to stop using your domain admin accounts on a daily basis. You need to use your domain admin accounts for doing domain activity, not workstations, not installing applications on your PC, not even doing stuff on your servers. You should have an admin account to do this, but it should not be a domain admin. Do not rely upon the default all access granted that domain admins has. Anyway, so what I've got here is a group policy preference that basically sets a workstation admin password, a workstation admin group to the local admin group on all your machines. Is that me? It's a bit noisy. Anyway, moving right along. So another thing you can do is, similar thing, server admins. So here I have another group, one I created earlier, called server admins. All right, I've applied these to the server role and to the workstation role. You can layer these together. So your server admins, you can layer another group on there, say your SQL administrators, so you can have target just your SQL servers, so the SQL administrators have admin access to their SQL servers. All right. I've done this before in previous sessions at TechEd in New Zealand, so I'm not going to show you, just updating group membership. That's not that exciting. What I am going to do is pass the hash and advanced persistent threats. One of the things about them is that they need back channels to be able to communicate, and you need to be able to get that malware in. And what's one of the most insecure pieces of software on your machine, any machine? On the machine, not at the keyboard of the machine, yes. It's the browser, right? So who here is guilty of running a browser on their server? Yeah, who here is guilty of running a browser on their domain controller? Right, there's a reason why the browser is locked down so much on servers by default. That's right, because that's how malware and bad stuff can get into it. One of the other mitigations for pass the hash is to actually use group policy to actually block the browsers. So there's a couple of ways you can actually block browsers. Of course, if you've only got Internet Explorer deployed in your organization, and of course no one has any other browsers deployed whatsoever in their organization, what you can do is create a group policy preference that basically just set the proxy of your browser to an invalid setting. So group policy preferences, connections, LAN settings. So I've just set the proxy to 127.0.0.1, port 12345. It's not going to go anywhere. All right, the browser is basically muted because it can't go anywhere. All right, and this is, you can then also go in and disable the connections tab to mean the administrator can't actually turn that off. Another one, and this is Microsoft guidance, is use AppLocker on your servers. And you can actually use AppLocker to restrict browsers on your servers. So here we have an example of some rules. That's how it's one I created earlier. So I'll just open that up and show you what it looks like. No, not NAP. AppLocker. So basically what I have here are just some rules that basically block Chrome, Firefox, and Internet Explorer. Because Chrome is a really great application and it obeys the administrator access. And it goes, oh, you want to install me and you don't have admin access? That's great. I'll just install you to program data because I have access there. Right? That's what happens when you try to install Chrome without admin access. It will still install. It's really bad. You know, like, that's just deliberately allowing people to install software without admin access, right? When clearly it was asking for admin access because, that's all right, I don't need it. But also, you know, portable applications as well, running Firefox off a USB memory stick. This basically, you need to lock your machines down to stop the malware getting in the first place. Right, this is preventative maintenance. So blocking AppLocker. So another thing you can do, remember how I was talking about reducing the scope of your domain admin account? Another thing you can do is actually use the access network, access from network permission, or access the ability to log on locally using security rights. So deny log on as batch job, domain admins and enterprise admins, all right? Deny log on locally, domain admins and enterprise admins. Apply this to all your workstations, all right? This is hard and painful to listen to, but I want to log on to my workstations with domain admins. Listen to yourself. You want to log on using an account that has access to the entire domain so I can install a program on my PC. My own PC or someone else's, right? That's the definition of excess permission, excess privileges, right? You really want to devalue domain admins. And guess what? When you start doing this, your requests for domain admins in your organization are going to go way down. Because no longer are people going to want domain admins because you say, yeah, I'll give you domain admins, no worries. And they try to install something on their workstation that goes, but I can't install anything on my computer. And it's like, yeah, good. All right, so this, I'm going to actually enable this group policy here. So I'm going to link enable this. I'm going to go to this machine here. So first of all, I'm going to go back. I'm going to log on as Alan. That's me. And of course, I've got a mortal account, and I'm a domain admin. Oh, are you serious? So my machines must have reverted at some stage. Please be quick. Really? No. I was like, man, if there was a way to bypass that, that would be awesome. It didn't take long last time, did it? I hope you're right. Hey! Hey, look at that, it worked. All right, so I'm logged on. I'm actually logged on and I'm a domain admin. My Allen account, which is a mortal account, is domain admin. All right, so I'm just gonna go in and I'm gonna do a GP update. So now I'm just gonna look at my local security policy. User rights assignment. Notice now the domain admins has actually got deny logged on locally. One thing you can't do is you can't deny administrators log on locally. That's a built-in privilege. All right, you can deny administrators logged on via remote desktop services though. All right, so. So now I'm just going to log off. Again, it's about, I keep coming back to this, it's about ensuring that if a machine is compromised, it's probably going to be your workstation. And you want to make sure that those admin accounts, the server admin accounts, and especially your domain admin accounts, can't log on to your compromised workstation. Because as soon as a compromised workstation has a domain admin account, right, it's game over. It's got access to your whole network. All right. But why would a domain admin ever log onto a workstation? Well, if the malware is installed on a machine and it starts making the machine run a bit slow, what's the first thing the users do? They complain to the help desk. What's the first thing the help desk does? They log on to the machine with their domain admin credentials. Game over, right? So what I've done there is effectively I've devalued the domain admin account. All right. So I'm going to just log on as a local account now, admin one. So now I'm actually logging on as a local account. I'm going to do a remote connection to another machine, which is just a Windows 7 machine. I don't have the reveal password. But basically, both these machines, I don't have to log on to this Windows 7 machine, but you know, for this demo, I'm logging on. And I have a machine here, it's Windows 7A. I'm just going to net use win7a IPC dollar. Remember, I'm logged on as a local account. And I just successfully created a network connection to a remote machine using a network account, using a local account, right? So this is where that built-in account local account, the built-in group local account can come very useful. What I'm going to do is I'm going to edit this. I'm going to add, actually it's already added there, but I'm going to go delete it and add it back in. Oh no, it's not there. Access this computer from the network. Now I'm actually on a domain controller, so this is pretty freaky. It took me a little bit to figure this out. I'm actually going to add a local account on a domain controller. So I need to add a user, I go browse, I have to select the domain controller computer account object. Now, normally you don't do group policy object editing on your domain controller. You should have a dedicated management server. I'll very quickly talk about that in a sec. Local account, actually, I don't. All right, and actually picks up, and these are the two new accounts that are built in, local account and local account member of administrators group. I'm just gonna pick local account there. I'm gonna throw local account in to deny the ability to access this computer from the network, local account, no, deny access, what am I saying? Yes, that's it. Oh no, I've already had it. I thought I had already had it there. So okay, there's one I did actually set up earlier. So I've added the local account and the deny access this computer from the network. I'm going to apply that now to my Windows 7 machine. It's already applied. It was already created earlier, but luckily GP update force. So what's that now doing? What that is now doing is applying a policy that says if you're a local account, you are not allowed to access me from the network, which means if I do have the same username and password set on all my local accounts, I actually am denied access to that machine from the network. But I can still log on locally. So local physical access control still pretty much allows you to access that machine. As soon as that's finished, while that's happening, /netuse/delete. I have to disconnect my session because if I leave the session open, it won't fail. And then I go, oh God, I'm not having a good day here. I'm very sorry. I know I am out of time. So deny access, pass the hash workstation, the link is enabled. Access from the network. Logged on as admin 1. Well, local accounts is all local accounts, and I'm connecting as a local account. I could do this as local accounts in administrators group, which just basically says, well, I can still remotely connect using a local account, and I don't have admin privileges to that machine. I don't understand why this in 7A. No, it's a local account. Look, I'm out of time and I'm really sorry. I had this working. All right, insert denied access from network here. I'm really sorry. No. But here's the thing. Hackers only need to succeed once, and they can try 100 different ways first before they succeed. As a demoer, you have to fail every time for it to actually work. I wanted this to fail when it's actually working. It's much harder to demo this because it's, you know, sometimes your mileage may vary. You need to test it. Look, very quickly, the only other thing I was going to talk about was have a dedicated management server, all right? You need to be able to manage your environment from a secure workstation, have a dedicated management server, set up group policies on that machine so that it actually denies any inbound firewall connections. That means that you use your domain admin accounts on a workstation, but that workstation is essentially isolated from the network and will refuse any inbound network traffic, so it prevents that lateral movement. You can use group policy to do that. Again, my slides have a heap of links in there. The problem isn't solved. It's about doing lots of good practices to make it much harder for your hackers to basically spread throughout your network. Download the slides, have a look at the white paper. There's a lot of good guidance. Just be really afraid, and hopefully you'll take that back to work and make your network more secure. Sorry that demo failed, but thanks again.